Dear Shooter, close the curtains. Bar the doors. You'll be lucky to escape this new terror unscathed. It shouldn't be alive. It shouldn't function. But somehow it does. Coming forth from deep within the bowels of evidence lockups, the latest scourge cooked up by the anti-gun left, zombie guns.
It's not about protecting the stupid, it's just, it is what it is.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a self-identifying llama. And it's because I have a quick temper and I like to spit.
You are not safe, and you are not sacred, and you're both liars.
We're talking about firearms, y'all.
Keep it clean.
I can hide one under there.
One what? I don't want to know.
I look like I got ran over by a paint truck on the way to Sherwin-Williams and then backed over by the short bus.
You know, let's talk about the modern trends in transsexual transitions.
Welcome to the Dear Shooter podcast. Dear Shooter is brought to you by WyoTac, empowerment through self-reliance, and by Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
It must be Thursday, and here I sit with my co-host, Jason Wilson, Brandy Crotto, and this came across my feed this morning, The Truth About Guns did an article on zombie guns, and all I had to read was the headline, and I'm like, we're going to have some fun with this.
Well, I actually had to read further because I was baffled, a little bit disgruntled because I was promised zombies.
Right.
And I didn't get them.
Oh, I know.
And I kind of feel gypped.
I know. COVID was the worst apocalypse ever.
Yeah, straight up. So I read a little bit, and they're defining what a zombie gun is in the article.
Right.
So they go on to say, a zombie gun is exactly what it sounds like. It's a gun that should not be living. It should not be able to operate, yet it does. Closing this loophole, and they're calling it a zombie gun loophole.
Yep.
To introduce more gun legislation that's going to do absolutely nothing at the end of the day.
No.
But the first thing they do is they throw law enforcement under the bus.
Right.
Because a zombie gun, for those of you who have just started to clue in, is a gun that has been procured from a buyback program or in an evidence locker, is in the capable hands of those who are supposed to destroy such evil machinery, and they get parted out and resold to the general public. That's a zombie gun.
So what you're telling me is Fast and Furious has risen from the dead.
I think it was just a preamble to what we got going on here.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant. But when they get put together, when people purchase them, they still go through the background checks.
Well, yeah,
sure.
They're
so what the hell is their problem?
They're being fostered by law-abiding citizens.
Right. So the companies that are contracted by these law enforcement agencies to destroy these guns are now, they're destroying the serialized part and selling the rest.
In theory.
So it's like an abortion clinic.
Parts is parts, I guess.
And what? Stem cell research for the rest of it? What are we talking
about? It might be. I mean, you know, that would be the ammo that they confiscate too. I don't know, but I'm waiting for Woody Harrelson to burst through the door with a chainsaw and hedge clippers.
So this thing was read on the Congress floor.
Yeah,
and flat out, other Democrats. There was 22 of them that co-sponsored this damn zombie gun.
And I need to do some looking because I want to find out who the other 22 idiots are.
Throw a rock, man! Holy moly. I got to ask. And I think I asked this earlier today when I was baffled by this. But are we talking about, you know, Day of the Dead zombie? Or are we talking about like 28 Days Later zombie? Because we're talking two different.
I don't know. World War Z zombie. I mean, those guys were scary.
They're scary and they're fast.
Right?
That hive mentality.
I guess it depends on which organs you got.
Gosh. This thing's it's absolutely just terrifying that they have to fabricate gun legislation based on what the things that your law enforcement's doing.
Well, my favorite, and don't worry, guys, we're going to post all these links, but they say that we have a crisis. The gun violence is the leading cause of death in children. Now, I went to the CDC, and I got the leading causes being motor vehicle accidents, suffocation, drowning, poison, fire, and falls. Shooting wasn't even on the list.
Gravity ranked higher than bullets.
Yep.
I'll be damned.
Well, you know, physics works. Even if you haven't had that class yet, physics works, and it applies. But it goes to show, and they even said that, you know, Gifford, so what, any what, moms demand whatever they demand at this point, jumped right on top of this, which is typical. Oh, yes, that was the other one.
So what is this bill going to solve? So
no, absolutely nothing. And they even say that the guy that's doing this, it's Maxwell Frost. He even says in his press conference that this really isn't going to solve the problem. This isn't the end all be all.
So they're going to sit there and argue about this and threaten to shut down the government because they're out of money, but they're stuck in this meeting over something that matters not.
Well, they're mad because somebody's profiting off of things that they were supposedly, well, they tell the public were destroyed.
But
well, if they part you out, you're destroyed.
We have law enforcement agencies that are struggling to keep taser cartridges
right
in their budget. And if they have completely legally obtained merchandise.
Well, let's let the I mean,
I'm going to go on my fantasy camp. Give me a second. If they have legally obtained merchandise that is property of the municipality, property of the county, of the state, I have no issues with them selling said property.
I don't either. I never have.
Now, the methods in which they obtain that property,
well,
that needs some oversight. And I would agree with that completely.
The whole seized for cause and the what do they call it? It's the confiscation. Some kind of a they have a term for it, and I'm blanking on it right now.
It's called robbing you.
Well, it that's what it boils down to. But they have a fancy term for it, so it doesn't sound as bad.
Fancy words make it legal, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, legalese. Nobody reads those contracts before they sign them.
At the end of the day, let's face it. They're not really coming for your guns. I mean, that's just a crazy conspiracy, right? They just want the zombie guns, the ghost guns, right, the assault guns, the guns that are bigger than an arbitrary defined size, the guns that are smaller than an arbitrary defined size, guns that operate quicker than an arbitrary defined speed, guns that have stocks, guns that don't have stocks, guns that have optics, guns that don't have optics, old guns, new guns, not too old of guns, guns being too new, imaginary, and undetectable guns that defy laws and physics. Is that pretty much what we're talking about here?
I do not like them, Sam. I am.
Exactly right. And I'm going to give some credit to Shire Man because he commented out on that whole post. But he's not wrong. This is a Dr. Seuss type of level.
Have you seen our government?
You know,
hardly I have.
And that's the thing. Like, we have been dealing with a lot of government entities lately, and I at first I was kind of excited because I'm like, okay, cool, we're going to be dealing with the adults in the room. No,
we are dealing with the ones that are more refined and throwing a tantrum.
That's a good way to put it, because. And I don't even know if I would classify that, because I got fired by a mayor in the most undignified way.
Well, you didn't really matter to him at the end of the day, because you represented change.
Right.
And you were a civilian on a governmental group that was elected to a said position, which
by the governmental group
would have given you more credibility at the end of the day.
Which is really funny, because then it was a government group when they went to fire him from that position. But now when they refer to you as a civilian group. So which is it?
We started out as a committee, and now we're a working group. Somewhere in the definition and the bylaws of how the counties run, the public has access to the meetings on one and not the other. We didn't want the public having access.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm being punished because I'm not dumb enough to go for mayor.
Right. Perfect. Well, and you got your ass chewed for calling it a committee and not a working group as a colloquial semantics.
No, I personally offended a very specific mayor by calling it a committee. And quite honestly, I wasn't aware of the difference.
Yeah.
But ignorance of the law is not a defense.
No, it's not. But back to the zombie guns. I mean,
dude, they've been going after ghost guns.
I know, but have they really completely run out of options to try and disarm us that now it's zombies?
It's been that for a while. And I'm going back to my previous statements. We started out with the assault gun, the assault rifle, right? What is that?
It is an Armalite.
No, it is not. Well, they're applying an action to define a firearm, which has to be human-controlled. So assault rifles don't exist.
No.
Then they went after ghost guns. Nobody actually knew what that was.
Because they don't exist.
Because it was evidently something like a serial number or a part that you couldn't trace or track. And that whole thing ended up with a 3D printing guy that actually stuck it in their butt because of freedom of speech.
Right.
It was his expression of artistic ability. And he won that case.
Right.
So they couldn't go after ghost guns anymore.
Well, it goes back to the pistol brace thing. They keep trying to make rules.
Right.
And they keep trying to legislate things that they know nothing about.
Assault, ghost, zombies next.
Oh, yeah.
So, preemptively, what's after zombie?
Ooh, I don't know. Vampire?
Poltergeist guns?
Ooh, let's go poltergeist.
Poltergeist
That'd
guns.
That'd be fun.
No, I think after that comes Frankenstein. Because they actually did die, and now we brought them back.
But see, I can define a Frankenstein gun. I own several of those.
Well, I do, too.
Which is zombie.
Spare parts with
right.
Abby normal
exactly
parts.
Exactly right. Spare parts.
Is Frankenstein not a zombie?
No.
No. How did you classify Frankenstein?
He was dead. He was put back together. And now he's alive. Zombie. He may or may not eat brains.
So,
you raise an interesting conundrum.
And I bet you he likes Twinkies. So I'm just saying.
Yeah, they do have a shelf life, but despite popular belief. But Frankenstein was aware of his consciousness, where I don't think zombies are.
Ooh, interesting.
Have you interviewed either one?
I've just watched all the movies. And I mean all of them. Maybe more than I should have. But yes, all of them.
Wow, that interesting. So you're saying that...
So Frankenstein is a snowflake. So he's a zombie snowflake. He is a zombie with feelings.
So that makes him a snowball, whereas the actual zombies are Twinkies. Because he has texture. He has depth.
I really have problems with the hostess reference, but you're not wrong.
So you have a lot of guns that are snowballs.
No, I have a lot of zombie-style Twinkies. But, yeah, I do not have a lot of snowballs.
So the consumer, all right, because they're selling these through third and fourth party outfits, right? How is the consumer to know that they're buying the quote-unquote zombie gun parts? There's no way.
There's no
way.
And
why would they care?
Yeah.
Right.
There's no way at that level for them to even understand where their parts came from. They don't care.
Right. They're buying used parts on GunBroker.
Sure.
I mean,
they don't care.
And they're like, okay, does it fit what I have? Does it function? That's it. That's the extent of their give a shit.
Yeah. Outside that, they don't care. And so, I don't ask them to care.
No, you shouldn't.
But we're talking about something where they are creating a circumstance.
Yep.
To have something to yell about.
Right.
To do absolutely nothing for the cause that they're yelling about.
To get money.
How is this going to get the money?
Oh, because everybody's going to donate to Guns for Everyone and Moms Demand Liposuction. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I mean, but at the end of the day, all of this, follow the money. And isn't this what government does? They create a problem so they can pretend to solve it to bilk us dry.
Has gun control, any of it, ever solved a problem?
About as well as prohibition.
Or TSA. No, really. I mean, if you hear the government say, hey, don't worry, I'm here to help, you should be really concerned.
Run away.
Because they don't help anything.
No.
Anything.
No. And a prime example of that, if we want to go back 20 years, Hurricane Katrina.
All right.
In what capacity did the government actually help?
Yeah, I got nothing. No, still nothing.
And in fact, I mean, we're the things that we're dealing with now. It's like the more the government tries to be involved, the more screwed up the project gets.
So, at the root of the discussion, they claim the problem is that these guns are ending up back in the hands of law-abiding citizens that have already passed a background check.
Right.
All right.
So the problem is?
That's where I'm
exactly
going next.
Yeah.
What is the perceived problem?
Because law enforcement is making money.
It's not even law enforcement. They're actually paying these companies to supposedly go destroy the guns. They're destroying whatever part that they actually have to destroy that they're contractually obligated to and selling the rest.
In theory. Because if a serial number that was supposed to be destroyed finds its way back to the market, I can see that being a problem.
I can too.
But it's finding its way to the hands of a law-abiding citizen who has passed that 4473 NICS check.
Right.
I fail to see the problem.
I mean, does a hammer that was involved in a murder, hammer
okay,
nails
what
any,
it is.
Any less?
No. This is a bill in which they're going to hide a shit ton of other things.
Ah, now we're getting to it.
Oh, okay. She nailed it.
She always does. So this is a bill that they're going to bury what in?
Anything. Isn't that what they normally do? They bury 8,000 things in one bill where everyone's going to, I'm going to vote for that, but they don't know what else comes with it.
Right.
You know, because it'll be like zombie guns, gay pride, people don't need money anymore, and we should just shut the power off.
Well, I love the spirit of your discussion, but they usually bury spending bill items. Things where they can acquire congressional funds from. And they're paying for these said things. I mean, don't make any mistake about it. They didn't pay $40,000 for a toilet seat. That didn't happen.
You don't know.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I do. No.
I'm going to have to go pee in that place.
And I hope you got your money.
It is solid gold. And it's in the Trump Tower.
Well, and Brian Cross has done that in Dubai. But at the end of the day, you're right. They're probably going to bury a whole bunch of what they call pork in the back end of the bill.
But it's such a weak bill to be burying shit.
It is.
Well, how many pages? I mean, the story's 2 pages. The bill can sum it up in a paragraph.
Who wrote this thing? Who's the lead charge on the document?
So the lead guy on here is Maxwell Frost.
What do we know about Maxwell?
Democrat.
He's a Democrat.
Yep. So let's look him up here.
Maxwell now, Frost.
Maxwell Frost.
That's a major appliance. That's not a name.
And what media outlet posted this?
This was the
truth about guns. Yeah. And for the most part, I find their stuff really entertaining and engaging. They've got their stuff pretty squared away. They fact-check their stuff before they put it out.
They do.
And if it's satire, they call it out that it's satire before they write it. it's kind of a well-written piece.
So he's representative from Florida's 10th district.
Florida.
Yeah. I'm guessing Miami. Member of the Democrat Party. He was the national organizing director for March for Our Lives, which is a gun control organization.
So he organized a March for Our Lives event.
So he's not smarter than a fifth grader.
Right. But if you look at the article, March for Our Lives jumped right on top of this.
As in support?
Yes.
Well, of course they did. He gave him a bunch of money.
Yeah, he absolutely did. I'll guarantee you. And he's prevent crime guns from reappearing in our communities and shut down the growing and unregulated black market for recycled firearms parts.
Whoa. Okay.
But didn't he say in that article later on that they're put in guns that law-abiding citizens do background checks
that
on?
That was like the first paragraph.
So he contradicts himself.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't, 18-point type double-spaced, it'd only be a page.
Right.
So, black market.
How is there a black market for unregulated parts?
There's not one.
Right.
And a black market precludes the idea that the merchandise is obtained in an illegal fashion.
Right.
By the cops.
Right. It, by definition.
Interesting. In the same vein, has anybody heard how Hunter Biden's doing with his plea agreement?
No, other than that's kind of disappeared from the news.
Huh.
Because he's fighting for the Second Amendment.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that, gun control could get unraveled by a Biden.
That would be great.
But the same mentality applies here.
Yeah.
On one side of it, he screams the sky's falling and there's this huge, enormous problem.
Right.
On the other side of it, he describes a situation that is completely legal.
Well, and I think that's what a lot of these anti-gun politicians do. They want to make the legal illegal. And make no mistake about it. And I will say it here. Look, once they disarm us, they're going to kill us. You know this, right?
The problem with this thing is it's so ludicrous that it's fear-mongering on a level that the NRA just wishes they had.
Right. Well, let's be fair. The left has always been better at propaganda than us. Always. And forever will. Because we will not, for whatever reason, we won't stoop to their level and play their game.
It's called ethics.
I think the time for ethics has passed.
Well, you take those gloves off and you actually take the leash off the dog, you're going to find a problem. Because when we stop going along to get along, you're going to see something different.
I know. And we're dealing with that now. But before we deal with that, let's take a break and talk about some whiskey. The 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company, based in Vail, Colorado, high up in the Rocky Mountains. 10th Mountain is a tribute company to the legendary 10th Mountain Division. Maker of fine spirits, including bourbon, rye, and vodka, as well as being a generous supporter of the shooting sports and veterans charities. Support those that support us, and to make it easier, 10th Mountain is offering our listeners a discount. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 10% off. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company, whiskey worth fighting for.
Happy Easter.
All right, so I can't unsee that. Something Wilson just showed me on his phone that I'm going to kick him in the balls for later.
Happy Easter.
So, I saw something that I think we're done beating a dead horse at this point.
That's just silly.
But I saw something. I was out on the range last week. I was doing a private class. And I walked up to another shooter and chewed his ass.
All right. So, what was going on?
So, we are on a 25-yard range, pistol range. And we're doing what we're doing, whatever, whatever. And somebody went next to us on the 50-yard range. No big deal. There's a berm between us, whatever, whatever. But they had their target set at like 7 yards from the benches, which meant that they were shooting through their targets, skipping rounds off the range, and they were ricocheting all over the place. We had rounds going over our head. I could see them going into the top of the berm, over the berm. It was bad.
It's a very bad practice.
So I walked over and went, you know, why don't you move your target up against the berm? And the response I got was, well, this is where it was sitting. That doesn't make it safe, dude. You realize that you are launching rounds off the range.
He had no idea.
He had no clue.
I see this all the time. And a range is only as safe as the intended use applied to it. The backstops are high for a reason. But they only do their job as an impact area if your projectiles impact the backstop.
Right.
Which means advance your target to the backstop and go forward of the line to conduct your operation that you're doing, as long as you're the only one there.
Right. I was going to point that out. You can't go up front in front of the line if someone else is there.
And that means you got to exercise, like at a gym, politeness, and ask and wait until they're done so you can do yours. You mitigate the situation by schedule.
Right. And this was a Wednesday afternoon. There was nobody there.
Or you move to another range.
Right.
Where you can do it in isolation, which is the point.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We see folks do things on ranges all the time that the range was never designed to accommodate a safety mechanism for. They have no thought process past the bullet hole in the paper for the consequences thereof.
Right.
Do they think their bullet just disintegrates on impact on paper?
Yes. They stop thinking about their bullet after it passes the paper, and that's the problem. Because we all know bullets don't stop
at paper. What is it? Rule number 3, be sure of your target and what's beyond it.
Correct.
Beyond it, guys. And that's the thing. Look, we talk about this in the Charter Doom. We've talked about this here before. Where if you're out in the middle of nowhere, BLM land, state land, whatever, you can do whatever the hell you want because nobody's within 50 miles of you.
In theory.
Right. But as soon as you step onto a public range, there are rules, and it's to keep everyone safe.
And I would even offer, if you're out plinking on public land, there are still rules.
Right.
You are not the only one there by an assumption, and you can't control the environment.
No.
By definition. There are still rules. If you are shooting and you see something move, like a ranger that comes over the top of the hill, right? They're in your background. You cease fire immediately until the way is clear.
Right.
There are still rules on public land. On a formal range, there are much more structured rules, and there's engineering controls put in place to mitigate the safety issues that are potential. The range is designed for a very specific activity. If you don't adhere to that within the bounds of safety, you're an asshole.
Well, and how many times have we said it? And I know we say it in almost every class. You are responsible for every round that leaves your muzzle.
Personally responsible.
Yes.
Yep.
And that means morally, ethically, legally.
Correct.
Financially.
You are liable.
Yes. And I don't think that gets hammered home enough.
I don't think it does either. And you saw a clear example of it on the range. His head was disconnected from the activity that he was doing. What was he shooting by? Just out of perverse curiosity.
10mm.
All right. So a pretty high-powered pistol round.
Yep.
Yeah, that's not stopping at paper.
No.
It's just not.
No. No. And that was one of the things that kind of made up my mind. I intend to go and run for the board to this range because some things need to be changed there.
And just awareness. Yeah. Bring the safety position up.
Right.
The whole range would benefit from it. And I find that shooters on a range are willing to understand and comply if it's brought to their attention.
Right.
As long as you bring it to their attention in a way that is not just in their face, you tried to shoot me, motherfucker.
No, it's got to be. And I'll be honest with you, because I had rounds going over my head. I was a little hot at the time, and I probably said some things I shouldn't. But I totally agree with you. It needs to be brought to the attention of the range overall. This is a problem, and here's your solution. And it goes back to go to them with a solution to a problem.
Correct. Everybody reacts more positively to, hey, this is an issue. Why don't you think about solving it this way? Rather than, hey, this is an issue. You're a jerk.
Right.
And that's a universal thing. That's not just shooting ranges. People react more positively to that level of communication than just straight being called out for being dumb.
Right, right. You know, and that was the whole thing. It's like it's a real easy fix. Let's just do it. And I think it all boils down to awareness, because the guy that I talked to, I don't think he even understood.
He never gave it 2 seconds thought.
No.
He thought he was shooting at a target that had soft dirt behind it that was going to slow, if not capture, his bullet. And I'm really giving him a lot of credit to have him think that far down the line. Most of the time, they just see their target and they shoot at it. Oh, hey, that was neat.
Right.
What happens after that projectile leaves that target area,
mm-hmm.
Is not their consequence. Actually, it is.
Right, right. And they don't, but I think you're absolutely right. As soon as that bullet punches paper, they have forgotten about it.
They have forgotten about it. They're on to the next round.
Yep.
Now, when you confronted him, and of course he had a surprised reaction, how'd that go?
Well, like I said, I probably didn't handle it as professionally as I should have.
You can work on that.
But it was you could see the surprise and the absolute disconnect in his face. He had no idea. It was something that hadn't even crossed his mind. So I said, all right. And I had him take 3-4 shots. And we watched 2 of them hit the top of the berm, which is 30 foot tall. And we heard 2 ricochet and go off the range.
So they made an audible roar sound.
Oh, yeah.
And left.
Yep.
Yeah. That one left the range.
And he turned around. He looked at me. He says, I didn't know.
Okay, now you do.
Yeah.
What action did it prompt?
Don't know, because I left.
Did he pack up and leave because he felt sheepish, or did he move his target?
I don't know. I left.
Interesting. So you spooled up from the range, pulled yourself out of the situation.
Yep.
It ruined your day.
Well, fortunately, I was done.
Okay. All right.
But, yeah, I mean, it. Hopefully.
All you new shooters out there, pay attention. Because you don't want to ruin some guy's day that might be a mentor for you later. Think about it for a second.
So, all right. So, I'm going to start throwing a new segment in here. What is your pro tip for the week?
Pro tip for the week.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
All right. Well, if you follow the socials at Lucid Optics, my pro tip is pretty simple. If you're going to engage in rhetoric about the shooting sports, know what you're talking about. You're going to find a guy that actually does know what he's talking about, and you're going to tell him something that's completely wrong, bogus, bullshit. And you may have heard it from somebody who you think is maybe smarter than you and you trust, but his information is just wrong. At the end of the day, know your facts, or don't say anything at all.
Okay.
I've been inundated for the past few weeks of, you need to offer more mil optics because it's a more precise unit of measure. And I had like 9 of these.
Wait, what?
Information, phone calls, and emails, some straight up calling me an asshole because I didn't offer enough mil options. In the world of mils are more precise than minutes talk. So I simply put out a very simple chart to understand that showcases the unit of measure for the optical angular unit of measure, mils versus minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the words very specifically because words mean things, right? And my post was definitely in the sarcasm range. But
no.
I just simply illustrated that mils are a grosser unit of measure, a coarser scale,
yes,
than minutes, and by definition, much less precise.
Agreed.
Now, you can be very accurate in mils, and there's a lot of shooters that are. And there's reasons that they shoot mils. It's a language issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a speed to acquisition of target if you're turning turrets. It's a method of communicating when your spotter gives you a call. I will concede all of those as a viable reason for mils. But you can't call it a more precise reason.
No, and I think this is where the confusion comes in. And when, as a spotter with a millimetered spotting scope, I can call, I can tell my shooter, you need to come right 0.2. To me, that is a more accurate description of how far you need to move than you got to go half a target.
And you're absolutely right.
And I think that's where the confusion comes in, because people feel like giving a 0.2 versus a half a target call, that makes them more precise. But that's not the case.
So let's dissect a couple things you just said. And I agree with you wholeheartedly before I get started, because it's going to sound like I don't as I explain. As an accuracy model, yes, you're correct. As a communications model, yes, you're correct. But I would never give a minute call in half a target.
Right.
Now, I would give a point of reference call, and we do it all the time that way.
Yep.
But I am not using minutes or mils in that point of reference call.
Right.
I'm using a call of, I know that you know where you held. I saw it splash. You may not have.
Right.
Hold here. Let's try that again.
Right.
It's a point of reference call. I'm not using a unit of measure.
Right.
Right? So when you start talking about unit of measure, now you've got to do the math and be that responsible shooter.
Mm-hmm.
If you're dealing with a minute guy, you've got to give him his calls in minutes.
Right.
Or, fine, have that point of reference call. And it does give you a more accurate if you're speaking the same language. You're mm-hmm. absolutely 100% correct. But nowhere in that conversation can you delude me to think that mils are more precise than minutes.
They're not.
They're not.
But I think that's where the confusion comes in, is because people that are calling mil shots and they're giving corrections in mils feel like that is a more, well, they feel it is a more precise call. While it is more accurate, it's not more precise.
No, and it's about a communication method to your shooter
right.
from a spotter perspective.
Yep.
Let's look at where mils are used stereotypically. They're used in pass-fail environments.
Yes.
They're used in environments where the communication needs to go to an artilleryman to help you bail you out of a bad situation. The artilleryman's going to use mils
yep.
for a gross unit of measure because
but
if
he's
he tried
shooting
to use
20
minutes,
miles.
If he tried to use minutes in a 20-mile solution, it'd be ridiculous.
Yep.
I concede that. But pass-fail environments, NRL, PRS, right?
Mm-hmm.
From a military perspective, yes, all of those things play. But from an F-class perspective, bench rest perspective,
don't work.
We use minutes.
That doesn't work, yeah,
because
exactly.
Because it's a smaller unit of measure.
Because you're shooting a 3-inch target at 600 yards.
Correct.
You've got to be absolutely precise.
If I need a mil call in that environment, I'm doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, back to the application orientation of everything we do.
Right.
And for the record, we offer both mils and minutes in our product line.
Mm-hmm.
And we do so intentionally to cover both segments of the shooters.
And I will say that I use both. Use and utilize both, depending on my application. Because it's all application-based in what, and basically what language you want to speak.
So using both, that makes you bilingual?
Something like that. Transgender, I don't know.
Wow, you said it, I didn't. Lord. That's my pro tip. Know your facts, know your increments before you open your mouth.
All right, so let me throw one at you that's in a similar vein, but we're talking iron sights on a pistol. If you're shooting and you've got your sights lined up, we talk about the whole equal light, equal height thing. I think everybody's probably heard that at some point.
If you haven't, you should.
Yeah, right. And most people think, okay, I get my equal height, equal light, and I put the very top of the front blade on the center of my target, and I should hit center, right?
In theory.
But not all sights are built like that.
Agreed.
And I don't think a lot of people understand this, that some sights are built that are center hold. And that's what they're talking about, is you get the equal height, equal light, and you center that blade on the target.
You ran into this very specifically.
Oh, I did, with a new gun that I had.
Yep, a new gun, and you ran it, and you discovered it after a few rounds.
Mm-hmm. And I ended up changing the front sight because there was no point of reference on the front sight to give me what we call a combat hold, which is you equal height, equal light, but now instead of being at the top of the blade, you need to center hold on the target with the center of the front blade.
Okay, so I'm going to challenge you to a detail now. Since I've said my piece about know your details, how high is a 6 o'clock hold sight?
I've never seen one.
How high is a center mass hold sight? How high is a suppressor height sight?
Okay. Okay, I get what you're going now. Yeah, okay.
Because you need to give the new shooter a way to look at the pistol and identify what they have.
Right.
Because most likely they've bought on fashion because it looks cool and are wondering why they have to hold differently when they go to the range.
Well, and to be perfectly honest with you, most guns come with a center hold sight. SIGs are notorious for a combat hold. If you're looking at suppressor height, now you've got, they may be either. They may be combat or center hold, but now you've got to figure out your offset.
Right.
These are all things that you need to know. And typically, if you actually dig into the manual that comes with your gun, it will tell you.
You're making people read?
Oh, God, I know. It sucks.
Oof. Yeah, so I would offer that you probably ought to publish this on your socials somewhere and give the information of what height sight does what.
I guess that's a project for
There's
the rest
a project,
of the
and there's yep. a video
and,
for
and,
that.
And now we're going to have to do one on mil versus minutes versus second focal plane and first focal plane. And
so there's an entire series there that needs to be done and done well.
Agreed.
I will say I have watched very competent people try and do videos on this, and they screw it up.
They do.
Nothing against them. It's just they're trying to rush through the information, and they miss things. Or they turn things around, and they got them backwards, or they're wrong. And they just rattle through it like that's the way it is. And people will believe it. So know your information.
Well, I think the biggest problem with those, because I've seen a lot of the same ones you have, and I think the biggest issues with those is they're trying to boil the information down to what is actually useful to the shooter. But the shooter has to understand the backstory.
Yeah. So a lot of them are trying to explain how to build a watch when most folks barely understand how to tell time.
Right. Couldn't agree more.
So lots of video series and information sets that come out. You will see the Deer Shooter Group dive into why does we do what we do, and there's a reason that people look to us for information. We've done it before.
I don't know. This is only my second rodeo.
That's right. I'll guide you. It'll be fine.
So, whether it's wading through the minutiae of first focal plane or second focal plane or center hold or combat hold or even if you manage to get your hands on a zombie gun, and now the threat is real because every time you open up your safe, you may be attacked.
I would be so lucky.
At least this time, you can actually blame your gun.